And once again, the Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, Give to the Max Day is coming on November 18th. If you become a 2022 Goal Line Club member, all your proceeds will go to the Give to the Max campaign. You can double your Gopher points. That's wonderful. And you're going to get to be a member for the duration of the 2021 season, which is not quite over yet.
No, so you get to you can get the Wisconsin Luncheon, the Wisconsin Tailgate, the Signing Day Social, and any of these member-only events that could potentially be coming up, like me and Fleck on National Signing Day. You want to be at that members-only event? That's where, again, Give to the Max Day coming up on November the 18th. Make sure you check it out. And again, to learn more about the Goal Line Club, go to goallineclub.org.
Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to PJ Fleck has a brand new 7-year deal edition. Luke, I can tell you firsthand, it's been a day. There's a lot to get into, but I'm just happy that hopefully this brand new 7-year deal, I mean, we can get into the semantics of whatever the hell you want to call it. But, like, I hope this means we can sit out the coaching carousel cycle for 2021 and not have to worry about any of these power, you know, these blue chip, whatever you want to call them, helmet schools coming after the head coach. But here we are, Luke. It's extension / new deal day.
It is indeed. And, you know, I guess we've come to know that that this is an annual event with Mark Coyle at the helm of the University of Minnesota's athletic department. He doesn't mess around with, at least with PJ Fleck, and he has found a way to extend his contract just about each year that he's been here, keeping him right about that 7-year mark, if memory serves correctly, and keeps increasing that buyout and then also lengthening how quickly that buyout goes down. Frankly speaking, like, if you're a Gopher fan, you got to be kind of happy, number one, that you're going to keep PJ around, but number two, that Mark Coyle is your athletic director orchestrating all this in the background.
Yes, and that's where, again, if you want to see what Mark Coyle had to say today, it's on Gopher Illustrated. If you want to see what PJ Fleck had to say about his new deal today, it's on Gopher Illustrated. If you want to see what the actual contract looks like, it's on Gopher Illustrated. It's been a long day of transcribing and whatnot, but the big news and notes would be that his base salary, now again, I'm not a lawyer, but I certainly know one, and I know that you're very close to one. But the way I understood the language in the contract is this. So PJ is making $4.65 million this year. Well, starting on November the 8th until December 31st of 2022, it is going to get boosted to $5 million annually. So he's actually, like, per day, if you want to do the math there, from November the 8th of 2021 until December the 31st of 2022, he's going to essentially not be, you know, he's making $5 million, but it's not annually. But you get the point I'm trying to make. So from 2023, it's $5 million flat. It's 2024, it's $5 million flat. So the head coach gets a raise. And from talking with some people over at the U to make sure I have this correctly, the assistant coaches pool gets a boost of $350,000 starting on February 1st, 2022, I believe. So right before the next signing day. So you get a bump to the assistant pool, which, again, we've talked about here for a very long time. And then I would note, Luke, the incentives is where I thought it got interesting, is they took out all the incentives that had to do with the college football playoff, which, with expansion coming and the hopeful trajectory of the Gopher football program that Mark Coyle hopes, thought it was interesting they took that out. But did you know what they put in? I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the contract yet.
I mean,
yet.
You know how much I've traveled today. I haven't looked at the contract.
So Fleck now gets what I like to call the Kirk Ferentz bonus. where if he wins eight regular season games in a given season, he gets $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
If he wins nine regular season games, I should clarify, he gets an additional $100,000. So I'm guessing that's Mark Coyle trying to say, we get that your pay is going to be at a flat $5 million here going forward, but if you win games, I will pay you. So that's also interesting. And then I know the most important thing that everybody wants to hear about is the buyout. And that's where the buyout from now until December 31st of 2022, essentially the next two recruiting cycles and coaching carousels, that buyout is back up at $10 million. And that's where it was currently at 4.5. But where I also found it interesting, Luke, is in that second year. So we saw in 2019 when this contract extension came and went, buyout was until December 31st of this, or of 2020, was at $10 million, and then dropped to 4.5, which is what Fleck had been at currently. Well, Mark Coyle made sure that the second year drop was not as, I should say, large this time. The second year, or starting in 2023, the buyout is $7 million, and then it's $5 million in 2024. I think I'm doing all my math right there. So Coyle got him to agree to that, which I think is interesting, puts the university in a better spot if Fleck does decide to leave for whatever reason, which, you know what, Luke, kudos to Mark Coyle for being able to work that language in. And again, the buyout's back up at $10 million. Now, is it unattainable for USC or LSU? Absolutely not. Like, they could throw $10 million into the University of Minnesota, and with the donors that they have down there, it could happen. But again, it puts the university in a much better spot, and hopefully this kind of nullifies the fears that I know many Gopher fans have. And that's where it's just, if you haven't read Fleck's comments today, I highly recommend heading over to GI to read them. But like, he does genuinely like it here. And I thought the funniest part about it, Luke, was, you know what he said about like, why do you like it here so much? He said, well, you guys have met me, you know me. I don't like to get bored, and I can never get bored in the Twin Cities area. And I was like, well, that's true. You could literally do anything within 30 minutes of the metro area here, hunting, fishing, go to a play, go to a sporting event, go to the lake. You can really do anything, which is why the Twin Cities is such a great area. So I genuinely do believe he is happy here. And I know a lot of Gopher fans are happy that he's happy, because as we've seen the last month, this team is on a pretty nice winning streak. And as you noted, Luke, he is 24-10 in his last 34 games at Minnesota. He's 14-7 in his last 21 Big Ten games. Probably going to be 15-7 because, oh, by the way, this is also our Illinois preview episode. But yes. I mean, for what the standards have been, I feel like at times people just don't understand. Again, maybe if you are new to following Gopher football, welcome. But Luke, I think at times people forget how mediocre this program has largely been for the last 50 years.
Yeah. And we talked about this in the breakdown some too. Like, we have to enjoy these moments. You know, I've also seen the argument like on our CFB where people are like, well, PJ Fleck, or, you know, Jerry Kill and Tracy Clays had the program like 31-24 in their last 4 years. And PJ Fleck is only 31-24 in his whatever. I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head. And it's kind of like, yeah, but if you really followed the program, you knew the year that Fleck took over, it was going to take a dive just based on recruiting, et cetera, right?
In like first year of, you know, guys are going to come and go, culture, the whole thing. Yeah. It is what it is. That's college football in the modern age.
Yeah, but like we were pretty acutely aware that it was probably going to go down. Like, we probably have to face reality. Maybe you can fix it a lot faster, but it's very likely this team might go down a little bit next year too. Like, we'll have to dig into it later in the offseason. But generally speaking, what he inherited was not a 9-4 program. It wasn't going to sustain that the next year. So I don't really buy that argument, but generally speaking, I am very pleased, you know, that they found a way to work this out. Obviously Coyle gets some credit, you know, PJ's agent probably deserves some credit in here too. Brian Harlan, who is the brother of Kevin Harlan, who Minnesota fans are quite aware of. But yeah, like generally, I think they found a good marriage between the University of Minnesota and PJ Fleck so far. And, you know, at the end of the day, sustaining a coach is one of the more important things in building a program. And they're finding a way to do it so
Iowa
far.
Why has Iowa and Wisconsin been so good for so long? And Fleck talked about it again today. Coyle talked it again today, is cultural sustainability. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're there for a long time, probably means you're doing a pretty decent job. You can't just burn a coach every 4 or 5 years and expect different results.
Yeah.
Like, I don't envy Nebraska fans mm-hmm. or just anyone covering Nebraska, because Scott Frost has put that program in such a precarious spot. It's a $20 million buyout, but Scott Frost is 5-18 in one score games. And to me, that's coaching. And it's like, if Scott Frost can't fix that program, you know, the golden child,
yeah,
who in the world? They'll throw money at somebody, but you know, I know what you're trying to say,
but the reality too is that it can take a long time to turn around a program. I'm not trying to make excuses for Scott Frost, but you know, there is precedent where it took someone like 5+ years in Barry Alvarez, right? I think they talked about this on the Eyes on Big podcast this week. I've read that numerous times before about like they were really nervous that Alvarez couldn't do it, and the next thing you know, after year 5, they really popped off. So it can take time, right? Like PJ has accelerated that kind of success here, and you know, at the end of the day, what is the top for Minnesota? Like we've talked about this before, I do think that this market and this university is capable of making a college football playoff. It's going to be very, very hard, and it's not going to be something you do year in, year out, but the precedent is there. Like urban universities can do it, and it can happen.
Well, that's where, again, I mean, for Minnesota to do that, they're going to need the college football playoff to expand to 12, which I do think they will do here in the very near future. But, like, I talked about it today on the Pair and the Spare podcast with Chip Scoggins and Justin Gard. I mean, I was just roasting the college football playoff committee. I don't know if you saw those rankings. Like,
sent me them, and I looked at them, and it's kind of like it's too early, and all that really matters is the top like four.
No doubt. Which, but like I feel for Cincinnati because they've won every game, and yet it's like all the college football playoff committee cares about is what you're like. Alabama at 2 is egregious to me. Like it's Alabama at 2 because they're Alabama, not because of what they've done this year. It's because of the name variety, and I hate that.
I mean. But anyone sans Georgia, who do you pick in the SEC, right? Like,
again, yeah, we're diving. We can get into that at the end of the episode. But, like, to your point, like, could Minnesota, if Fleck continues to stay, if Fleck's here another, say, the duration of this new deal, which is a 7-year deal. And so, again, the deal now goes until 2028. You can call it an extension. I don't know what you want to call it. It's the legal mumbo jumbo I leave to my lawyer, which Luke knows awfully well.
It's totally the legal mumbo jumbo or whatever you want to do. It's all PR, right? Saying they're extending.
Yes.
Them.
And that's where in 2 years when that buyout drops again, if Fleck's continuing to do well, what is he going to do? I can guarantee Coyle's going to come to him and say, hey, let's do another extension or a new deal or whatever the hell you want to call it. But like, I look at like what Minnesota's done, and yes, does he have to start beating Wisconsin and Iowa? No doubt. I'm sick and tired of hearing that argument, but yes, no doubt he does. But like, Luke, do you know how many times since 1990 Minnesota has won 4 straight games in the Big Ten?
Oh man, once for sure, maybe 3 times.
3 times since 1990.
What a guess.
So essentially, that's a, you know, I was born in 92 and you know, they've done it 3 times in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I've seen people making the like, he shouldn't have gotten. I'm like, okay, Luke, do you know how many times Minnesota's won 5 straight Big Ten games since 1970?
2?
They've done it once. And if they beat Illinois, where they're a 14-point favorite, it's like, yeah, like he's elevated them out of mediocrity. They're a good football team now. Now, is there an fantastic opportunity to go win the West in the short term here? Absolutely. And we can get into that over the next month. But I absolutely believe this was the right move for Mark Coyle, for the university, get that buyout back up, you know, show the recruits now that we're only 6-7 weeks from National Signing Day, which I cannot stress to you enough, Luke, how much anxiety that gives me, because rest in peace all of my December evenings. But that's why Gopher Illustrated has the most amount of information there, Luke. But it's, it makes sense for everybody all around. Fleck doesn't have to, you know, listen to the, because I can tell you, like, Jacob Knuth, Minnesota's quarterback, said to Alan True tonight, like, I can tell you that other programs were trying to use, you know, Fleck's name against him in terms of like, yeah, he's going to go to LSU. He's going to go to USC. Come for us. We're going to stay here. Well, you continually give him these contract extensions every 2 years. You're going to show recruits that you actually want to be here. It's going to help your recruiting, which, again, talent acquisition, toughest part to do, and then talent development and talent deployment. I mean, again, Minnesota is recruiting at a much higher level than what we saw previously. Do they still have a ways to go to get to where Fleck wants in terms of top 25 classes every year? Absolutely. But if you continually stay at the same place for a long time, Luke, I would imagine you're doing a pretty good job, and I would imagine that more and more kids are going to want to play for you. So I think it makes a lot of sense all around. The man's locked up now through December 31st of 2028, which seems like forever away, and it is. But I think overall it makes a lot of sense for both sides, Luke.
Yeah, it'll be a good thing going forward, right, to have him locked up. And something we probably should start tracking on this podcast is if and when he becomes the longest tenured coach post Glenn Mason, right? Because Glenn was probably here the longest. It's something we can keep our eye on because there's been so much turnover.
Off the top of my head, I mean, I'm trying to think of how many coaches there have been even in my lifetime, and it's been probably far too many. But yeah, again, if he's here for the next 15 years, he's probably winning games, and it's probably going well for the Gopher football program. So all I know is he's turned this thing around the last few years and elevated Minnesota out of perennial mediocrity. Now they've got to take that next step here over the next month, but I get the timing of it. And, you know, I think if you were going to pick a week to do it, I would do it this week and not next.
Once again, the Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, we are down to two tailgates left. Again, if you want to join the Goal Line Club, you can do that, and a great time to do that might actually be November 18th on Give to the Max Day, because it is going to, you know, give you a bonus on Gopher points as well as get you access to both 2022 and 2021. But there are only two tailgates left, Ryan. The Illinois one here at 11 a.m. You and I will both be there. And then obviously the Wisconsin tailgate as well over the Thanksgiving holiday. I am looking forward especially to what probably is the last breakfast tailgate, Ryan, because once again, there will be French toast for my son.
Yes, there will be. Tony's Diner, which a lot of you remember from your glory days at the University of Minnesota, one of the best breakfast joints, if not the best breakfast joint on campus, will have smoked ribs, eggs, and French toast. Now, if that doesn't sound delightful to you at 8 o'clock in the morning on a beautiful sun or a Saturday morning, can I interest you on bottomless mimosas or bottomless screwdrivers or bottomless bloodies or bottomless, you name your adult or non-adult beverage? It's all included in your tailgate. So I will be there at 8 a.m. I'm sure Luke will be there very close. That's when it opens for the 11 a.m. kick. Come hang out with us. I'm going to have half a screwdriver before I got to walk over to Fox 9 for TV obligations, but nothing like taking a little hair off the dog there. So if you want to learn more, if you want to come hang out with us at the tailgate, again, it's $10 off for you non-members. Go to goallineclub.org/events. Come hang out with us at the tailgate on Saturday.
All right, we do have to preview a game against Illinois. A lot of, you know, a lot of interesting nuggets given the PJ Fleck extension, so we had to talk a little bit about that. And plus, man, the noise about people wanting us to talk about that also warranted it. So let's talk about this Illinois game when the Gophers, well, maybe we should talk quickly about injuries in that situation. No Potts, no Bryce Williams, no Mo Ibrahim. That's kind of our headline in terms of injuries and has been for a while. You know, just the lack of running back depth is just getting worse and worse every day. But any other injuries we should be mindful of going into this game, Ryan?
Well, we're still waiting to hear if Trill Carter, Minnesota starting nose technique, is going to be back or not. Yes. He was in the concussion protocol last week. we don't know. Shocker, Fleck didn't really bring that one up in his press conferences. I would hope he's out of the concussion protocol by now. I mean, if he's not, that's not obviously great. But assuming you get Trill Carter back, I mean, for the most part, you're pretty healthy. You did lose Bryce Williams for the year, which the angry running back god really decided to move from Iowa to Minnesota here. And if you hadn't heard, Bryce Williams is out for the season. He had surgery, I believe, on Tuesday on a lower leg injury. So I don't believe it's an ACL. I think it's something to do with the ankle, from what I've been told. And we're hoping, obviously, for a quick recovery for him so he can be ready to go for spring ball. Luke, have you ever heard of an ankle type of surgery that would make you feel that in 2 months when Minnesota has a bowl game that Bryce Williams would be ready?
No, I don't see how that adds up. So,
yeah, I'm with you there. So here's what I also say, like at wide receiver for Minnesota, they continue to be as healthy as they've been. You know, Ottman Bell is still 100%. Dalen Wright has been practicing for weeks now. He's back. Daniel Jackson, you saw him play. You got Michael Brown Stevens there. Still have Brevin Spanford at the tight end for a pass catching position. Yes, we also have Coke Heath, which, oh, by the way, I looked it up, Luke. Do you know where Coke Heath ranks among run blocking grade on Pro Football Focus for Big Ten tight ends?
I think he'd be number one.
He is number one, and I believe that he is number five overall in college football. He is the best run blocking tight end in the Big Ten. We've said it for some time, but PFF also agrees with us. On the Illinois side of things, their starting quarterback from two games ago, Arthur Satowski, he's out. So that means it's the Brandon Peters show. We'll get into him in a bit. Their number two tailback, Joshua McCray, he was a little bit banged up last week against Rutgers. He had the flu. And now he doesn't have the flu, so he's going to be good to go. He is the thunder to the lightning that is Chase Brown. And then at linebacker for Illinois, it's not a new injury, but I would note that Illinois' top two linebackers will be out for this game from just a month or two ago. So it's going to be an interesting battle because Illinois gives up a lot of yards, but they don't give up a lot of points. But as far as injuries go, other than the Bryce Williams news and us waiting to hear if Trill Carter is going to play, you won't know essentially until the first series, because welcome to the University of Minnesota with their injury reports or non-injury reports. But other than that, Luke, that's what it's looking like.
All right, so let's look at when the Gophers are on offense. The Gophers on the season are averaging 28.4 points per game, 370 yards of total offense, about 147 yards through the air, and 222 on the ground. Conversely, Illinois is giving up 23.3 points per game, 402 yards of total offense, 241 through the air, and 160 on the ground, Ryan. This Illini defense, I think, is actually better than people probably give them credit for. They just have such, I don't know if an anemic offense is the right term, but their offense has really struggled to score. You know, they're pretty one-dimensional, you know, somewhat by choice, but also by necessity. Sure. And Chase Brown's good. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Like, he's good, and McCray has been good as well. But generally speaking, like, you know, this defense has been good, but they are a bit injured.
They are. Like, this Illinois defense, well, here's what I'll say. From talking with Jeremy Warner of the Illini Acquirer, which is our fantastic Illinois 24/7 site, he does a fantastic job covering them. Strongly recommend you checking out his stuff there if you're looking for an Illinois perspective. And then talking with your guy, Big Kurt of the Eyes on Big Ten podcast, the big Illinois fan that he
I've never talked to him. I got to do that, though. He seems like a good dude.
We slid into the DMs and we had a nice conversation. Good. So what I've learned about the Illinois defense is Ryan Walters, their defensive coordinator, has got them playing well, but I don't know how much of it is smoke and mirrors. And what I mean by that is they haven't given up more than 24 points defensively in the last six games. But I also don't think they've really played a ton of great offenses in those six games. And it's also, I think, deceiving because I look at Illinois' run defense here in conference play. They're 11th in rushing yards allowed at 168.7, and they are 10th in yards per carry allowed at 4.3. Now, I say smoke and mirrors because the Illini have only faced one Big Ten offense since September that ranks in the top half of conference in rushing production. That was when they played that Badger offense a few weeks ago, and that's when the Badgers' two starting tailbacks, and Chaz Malusi and Braylon Allen, went for 276 yards on 39 carries. And for those of you doing your Tartan High education math at home, that is 7.07 yards per carry. So they have faced one Big Ten offense in the top half of running production in the last 2 months, and that lone offense just ran the ball down their throat. But, and from talking with Mike Sanford about it today, he even noted, like, he watched the Purdue game. He's like, Purdue put up a ton of yards, but then they only managed 13 points. And that's where he knows, like I do, every drive needs to end in a kick. And whether that's a PAT, which is ultimately the goal, because that means a touchdown, or a field goal, this Illinois defense is really good at being, you know, they're not very good between the 30s, but once you go from the 30 in, they get become incredibly stingy. And so if you're Minnesota, you need to be efficient on your drives, because this Illinois offense is going to try to do the same thing that Minnesota's trying to do and dominate time of possession. Because that's the other thing that Sanford noted with us here today is their defense isn't on the field a ton like you would expect a 3-6 team to be, because their offense does such a good job, or they have at least recently, of taking the ball away and just having these, you know, 5-6 minute play drives that maybe they result in points, maybe they don't. But Minnesota, I mean, it's going to be my first key to the game. If you can get Illinois in a negative game script early, this thing could get really good for Minnesota, I would say.
Yeah, quickly, just a couple things that stand out to me, just looking at the stats of war preview. Number one, Illinois not particularly good on first and second down defense, so the Gophers have to be aggressive early. We've seen their willingness to kind of start to do that, but their defense does tighten up on third and fourth down. But again, Minnesota has been pretty efficient on third and fourth down as well. The other thing that I would note is that Illinois has a propensity to give up big running plays. Their EPA per rush is 93 in the country. So generally speaking, like this could be a good matchup for the Gophers if they're willing to continue to be aggressive on offense.
Which was probably the most interesting thing, because you're down to two backs. You have Kai Thomas and Marquise Irving. I would note that Derek LeCaptain has switched to offense full-time now, because Bryce Williams is out for the year. I mean, even in practice, he's got a white jersey now. So they also, and Fleck mentioned it, Jordan Newbin, a walk-on freshman who was a defensive back, Tyler Newbin's younger brother, has also moved to running back for the remainder of the season. And God help us if we have to see Derek LeCaptain or Jordan Newbin get more than five carries the rest of the season combined. Because if that's the case, I can assure you, things probably won't be going that great offensively, because you're already down your top four backs and Mo Ibrahim, Trayson Potts, Cam Wiley, and Bryce Williams. You're on number 5 and 6. I mean, it's an interesting point, because I asked him, I go, well, you got two. I asked Sanford, I go, you got two running backs left. You got four games left and you got Big Ten West aspirations. Like, how do you manage this thing? And he's like, it's, he took a long time to think about it.
Which, you just gotta play. Ever heard,
well, I mean, and that's what he's like. He's like, I want to go with the hot hand, but I also can't, because I need tread left on the tires, is the phrase he used for these. You know, there's bigger games than this one, hopefully, for Minnesota, starting next weekend in Iowa City, and you need to keep them healthy, ready to go. So I have a feeling that if this thing is, boy, I don't know, like 24-7 in the fourth quarter, I'm hoping and praying you see Derek LeCaptain carries, because they need to make sure that Kai and Marquise are about as rested as they can be, Luke.
Okay, let's look quickly when the Gophers are on defense. Illinois is averaging 17.1 points per game, 324 yards of total offense, 145 yards through the air, 179 on the ground. Minnesota, conversely, is giving up 18.9 points per game, 303 yards of total offense, 210 through the air and 92 on the ground. I do imagine that this run defense will be tested. And, you know, the run defense has been pretty successful throughout this season. They will be tested here. I'm mostly interested to see if Illinois comes out in this, like, basically nine offensive linemen approach, like they did at least one time against Penn State.
The way I kind of think about this Illinois offense as it's currently constructed is it's like a 2018 version of Minnesota, where I don't know that they have the horses to do what they want to do, where, like, it was, well, the 2018 offense was very inexperienced, where Illinois is, that's a terrible comparison. I'm just going to move on. But, like, Brandon Peters stinks. He is the quarterback. You know, he made some throws against Rutgers It was like his best game of the season, but he hangs on to the ball too long. And he's not incredibly mobile. So you have a quarterback, hangs on to the ball, isn't incredibly mobile. Wonder what that means for Boye Mafe, Thomas Rush, Niles Pinckney. Sezio Tomiwu, hopefully good things. But Chase Brown is legitimately good. He is Illinois' top-rated player. He's got 707 rushing yards in the season. 505 of them are after contact, which is 71%. That's absurd. He's really good. Joshua McCray is the lightning to the thunder that is Chase Brown. 81% of his yards.
I think you said that the wrong way. Chase Brown's the lightning. Joshua McCray is the thunder.
Yes, thank you for correcting me. So there's a lot of yards after contact in this running offense. Now, they have an experienced O-line. It's been good at times. It's been not so good at times. But, like, they just want to play ball control because they have a quarterback they don't trust. They have a pass-catching core that is essentially just converted quarterbacks in Isaiah Williams, who's a really, really good athlete. He's their best best pass catcher from what I've gleaned. But that's about it. Like, if they get into a negative game script and Brandon Peters has to go win them a game, it probably isn't going too well. Their pass efficiency ranks 13th in the Big Ten, second to last. They're somehow only averaging 123 yards a game. I don't know how you can only be averaging 123 passing yards a game and you're 3-6. Like, that's kind of remarkable to me.
Yeah.
And Rossi talked about it today, Minnesota's defensive coordinator, Joe Rossi. He talked about how, again, they need to stop the run. And they know they need to stop the run. They have a game plan to stop the run. Now they got to go out and do it. So if you can stop Chase Brown, if you can stop Joshua McCray, and Illinois even likes to get fancy with these 6-7 O-line packages, and that's where Rossi's like, well, I'm thankful for our offense that we saw do that in the spring, in the summer, and in fall camp because we got a little bit of experience against it. But if they just don't let Chase Brown beat them, I feel pretty good about Minnesota's chances.
Once again, Ryan, it is time for Gopher Math. If you have to pay taxes, wait, all of you have to pay taxes and you're looking for a way to save on your taxes, not just now, but also in the future. And you want it personalized to you yourself and not just some standardized thing off the shelf that they give you. Reach out to Ayers Rock Planning. They are going to personalize a tax plan for you and not just for this year, but for the future, because you're probably going to have kids. If you already have kids, you're probably thinking about the college already. You're going to have medical expenses, everything. Just plan in advance. Thanks to Ayers Rock Planning, you can do that. So reach out to them at ayersrockplanning.com. Slide into the DMs at Ayers Rock Plans. And Ryan, what is that Gopher Math gift that they are all vying for?
You get 2 months free of Gopher Illustrated. That gets you all the way through the bowl season, gets you all of recruiting season coming up here. If you want to get behind the paywall and you want to do it for free, when we release this thing, I mean, get the answer correctly, get 2 free months. Seems like a heck of a deal to me. And that's where this week's question is. And I'll remember to tell you once again, PEMDAS does not apply. All right, this question. The net margin of victory in the last two games for the Gophers versus Illinois. Good Lord. The points that the card told Brett Bielema to go for in 2010 minus the margin of loss in Rob Smith's last game at Minnesota as the defensive coordinator. So once again, the net margin of victory in the last two games versus Illinois divided by the points that the card told Brett Bielema to go for in 2010 against Minnesota minus the margin of loss in Rob Smith's last game as the defensive coordinator at the University of Minnesota. I can assure you this number is a whole number. First one to tweet it to at Ayers Rock Plants, at Ryan Burns MN, at Gopher Radio with the hashtag Gopher Math gets 2 free months of Gopher Illustrated. If you're a new member or an existing one, good luck.
All right, Ryan, let's get to some facts and some figures for this specific game. Currently, I can't remember what it opened at, but currently the Gophers are a 14.5-point favorite with a 44 over-under on the season. Minnesota is 6-2. They are 5-2-1 against the spread. Illinois is 3-6. They are 4-4-1 against the spread. This will be a game on November the 6th at 11 a.m. on ESPN2. So if you have a DVR that you need to set, go ahead and find that on ESPN2. Taking a quick look at the weather, Ryan, for this 11 o'clock kickoff, it should be an actually pretty nice day considering that it's early early November. Kickoff temperature should be about 49 with about 8 miles an hour of wind. The feels like temp might be a little bit more like 45, but it's going to warm up nicely into the very low 60s, maybe 60, 61 around the end of kick. It should be pretty clear with maybe a little bit of partly cloudy as the game ends. Generally speaking, just some beautiful football weather on an early November football game.
Do you know what also is Saturday?
No, I don't.
It is deer opener.
Oh, my.
In the gun hunting world. So for those of you that are going to join the army of the Blaze Orange, number one, good luck. Number two, I can tell you from someone who's been trying to sit in a tree stand, sunrise is damn near 8 o'clock at this point, which is insane to me. So I get to sleep in until like 5:40. Now, obviously daylight savings kicks in on Sunday and you'll have to set that alarm an hour back. But for those of you who are still trying to accomplish what I am, or your journey begins on Saturday out there in the tree stand, aim small, miss small, and best of luck to you.
All right. So when we look at this game, Ryan, the Gophers being a 14.5-point favorite, I do have something I have to share. On the season, Minnesota's 5-2-1 against the spread. Do you know what happened in the two games where Minnesota did not cover the spread?
Did they lose both?
They did not lose both games. No, they did not.
Okay.
In the two games that they did not beat the spread, one would be a loss, the Bowling Green loss, because they were like 30-ish point favorites, right?
Did they not score 30 points?
In the Bowling Green game?
Well, in the two games that they didn't win against the spread, did they not score 30 points?
That is
those games.
That is one thing. Well, they
that wasn't what you were going for.
That wasn't what I was going for. Minnesota was a 30.5-point favorite against Bowling Green, and they lost. So that is one that they didn't beat against the spread. The other was against Miami of Ohio, where they were a double-digit favorite as well, but only ended up winning by 5. So what I'm trying to get to is when Minnesota has been a large favorite, they have not fared particularly well in those games.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you right now, I think you're insane if you take Minnesota minus 14.5. I mean, could they do it? Yes. Do I think they will? Possibly. Am I going to pick that result? No. So, I mean, the way Illinois wants to play this game, I just have a hard time. Well, I don't have a hard time. Like, if Illinois just sputters offensively and Minnesota is efficient in the first half, I could see it getting away from them. But I don't like this number. I don't know how you pick it with any sort of confidence here.
Yeah, I don't either. So if the Gophers are going to be successful, they are going to beat the spread, they are going to win this game, what are those keys to that win, Ryan?
Well, the first key, I mentioned it earlier, is you got to put Illinois in a negative game script early. And there's a lot of reasons why Illinois is 3-6 in year one of the Brett Bielema era. But I can't put a lot of that blame on the Illini defense. They haven't allowed more than 24 points in their last six games. And their first-year defensive coordinator, Ryan Walters, has got this group playing well. But everyone here knows Minnesota is going to want to run the ball. So how does Illinois' run defense fare in Big Ten play? I mentioned it earlier, they're 11th in rushing yards allowed per game at 168.7. They're 10th in yards per carry at 4.3. And I'd also note, baked into those numbers is the fact that Illinois has only faced one Big Ten rushing offense since September that ranks in the top half in conference play in rushing production. And that's when they played Wisconsin a few weeks ago. And Ches Malusi and Braylon Allen ran for 276 yards on 39 carries for a balmy 7.07 yards per carry average. So the point I'm making, Luke, is I don't know how good, in air quotes, good this run defense is for Illinois.
Sure.
If they're already in the bottom fourth of the conference, yet they've only played one team in the top half of rushing offense since September. And that's where I already note, Illinois' top two linebackers and Jake Hansen and CJ Hart, they're out for this game. They've got some talented defensive linemen and Keith Randolph and Roderick Perry specifically, but I expect to see Minnesota to at least have something resembling success running the football. But why getting out to an early lead against Illinois is important is, just like 1 week ago against Northwestern, the opposing offense for Illinois isn't currently constructed to come from behind. The Illini rank 13th in pass offense efficiency, and they rank 13th in passing yards per game at a balmy 123.2 yards per game. They want to run the ball. It is a Brett Bielema offense after all. So if Minnesota can take an early 10-0 or 13-3 lead, good things likely aren't going to result if Brandon Peters has to have 30, 35, heaven forbid, 40 dropbacks. Now, their best skill position player outside of Chase Brown and Joshua McCray is their wide receiver, former quarterback, Isaiah Williams, who is a heck of an athlete, but he's still learning the ropes at wide receiver. So if you're the Gophers offense, I'd be testing that run defense early for Illinois. But as we've also seen the last two first halves, really the last three first halves since that bye week, mixing in Tanner Morgan in the passing game, getting them some confidence before that Iowa game, I think is also vital. So get an early lead to make sure that Brett Bielema cannot lean on Chase Brown, and that running game is vital. Now, I just mentioned him, but that's my number two key to the game. Stop the running back, Chase Brown, and make Brandon Peters, the quarterback, beat you. Chase Brown's really good. He's Illinois' top-rated player on offense, and he's got 700 rushing yards, and 71% of them are after contact. Their freshman tailback, Josh McCray, who is the thunder to the lightning of Chase Brown. See, I didn't screw that one up, Luke.
Good job.
He's got 81% of his yards after contact. These two backs and this offensive line make this thing go for them. They want to be run heavy. This is a Brett Bielema team, but Brandon Peters has been a game manager at best. He's completed 52% of his passes for 600 yards and three scores, and I think he's played in seven games. He was injured early, and then Satowski took over, didn't give him the jog back until he got injured. But this passing offense is incredibly anemic. So if Minnesota defensive coordinator Joe Rossi and his defense continue to stop the run, and you make Brandon Peters beat you with 30 to 40 throws in a game, I think that's going to be a good game script for Minnesota. And my last key, Luke, is this can't be a letdown game before Iowa. You know, you'd hope with the amount of rah-rah that PJ has about one-week seasons and one-week championship seasons, mentioned today how they just need to get back to figuring out Illinois. They got to go 1-0 in the championship season against Illinois. Well, I hope that's true because everything still remains in front for Minnesota heading into their first November game. They're atop the Big Ten West with a gargantuous type of game in Iowa City next week, but you can't afford to overlook, a veteran-laden Illinois team. We saw just 2 weeks ago how they went into Happy Valley and outlasted a ranked Penn State team in 9 overtimes to earn the victory. So they have to be 1-0 in the Illinois season come Saturday afternoon. Don't let Bowling Green beat you twice.
Once again, Ryan, we need insurance in our life. We need it. Even if we don't want it, we need it. And if we want to save money on that insurance and we want to have someone do that shopping for us, we obviously go to the Bill Insurance by Burns. So what is Bill going to bring when he shops for your insurance?
Well, again, the Burns Insurance Agency, owned by my father, Bill Burns, he loves to shop. Luke mentioned it, and I'm not talking about the Mall of America. I'm not talking about Amazon, which we all spend way too much time on. I'm talking about shopping your insurance rates for the best prices and the best coverage for you. He is an independent insurance agent and a giant Gopher fan that has access to over 20 different insurance companies to shop for the best coverage at the best price for you year after year after year. So if you want to make sure that somebody can do the insurance shopping for you this year, email him at bill@insurancebyburns.com or check out their website at insurancebyburns.com to make sure you're getting the most bang for your buck with the holiday season approaching.
All right, the Gophers happen to sit at number 20 in the country, Ryan, according to the playoff committee. This is their first ranking of the season. And we probably need to talk a little bit about these rankings before we preview some of these games. Currently, by my count, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams in the Big Ten that are ranked right now. 6. I missed one. So there are 6 in total of the 14 that are ranked. Ohio State coming in at the top at number 5. And then and then Iowa rounding out at 22. I know you have some very strong feelings and you've made that well known. So I'll give you your soapbox. Give me your very strong feelings, Mr. Burns.
Well, first of all, to keep it micro level, I mean, Minnesota at 20, again, shocker, the guy on the Gopher Football Podcast thinks it makes sense, but watch the last six games for Minnesota. Yeah, the Bowling Green game that a lot of you still can't let go. I'm aware it happened, but we'll look at the other five games and you tell me which one's the outlier. I think if you look at the body of work Minnesota's put over the last month, I would tell you they're playing like a top 20 team in the country right now. Now, I think you could have put Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa in any one of those orders between 20 to 22. Doesn't really bother me anyway. It's early November. All this stuff will work itself out. But the macro level view is this is just turning into the Power Five college football playoff.
Oh, yeah.
Like if you're Cincinnati, you have a legitimate gripe that you're undefeated. And if you remain undefeated, I don't know that they're going to make it in, which is why this thing, number one, needs to go to 12 so that this whole discussion doesn't matter. But I also feel for like UTSA, they're undefeated, go Roadrunners, and they can't even get ranked and they're undefeated. Like, what else do you want them to do? Like, I'm not asking for them to make the college football playoff, but I look at some of these teams in here, and the last, like, nine teams is an interesting decision by, I think, the playoff committee. Not sure I would have put them in that order, but, like, I hope that the college football playoff expands sooner than later. I hope it goes from 4 to 12. I don't think it dilutes things at all. I just think more deserving teams then will get in. And a lot of these discussions become a moot point. Plus, for a team like Minnesota or Iowa or Wisconsin, on like a year like this, if you can get to the Big Ten title game and you can have a decent showing, let alone win the game against Ohio State, like you're going to have a chance to be in the playoff if that's the case and there's 12 teams. So I hate that, like, AP, like, first of all, preseason rankings should never exist because I look at, like, if you were to go back right now and look at, like, some of these preseason ranks, like, Indiana was a top 15 team, I think. Indiana's now 0-5 in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And it's like, no one knows anything in the preseason. Like, let's let all that die and let these preconceived notions of what teams should be heading into the year versus what they are now 2 months in the season. I'll get off the soapbox now, but yes, Minnesota, according to the college football playoff committee, which is really the only thing that really matters now, the AP poll doesn't matter. The college coaches AP or the college coaches poll doesn't really matter. You got a top 20 team right now going into November, Luke.
Here's my comment. I just find it very humorous. They're like, okay, we got to fit the Big Ten West into the rankings. Currently, they sit Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa. Yeah, let's just put them all together back to back.
Draw them out of a hat. They all got to. Well, Minnesota's got to play both of them anyway.
Yeah, like, but like currently, that's the standings.
Wisconsin in front of Iowa because they won the head to head, but Minnesota ahead of them. Again, I think it's all a moot point. Yeah. It'll all work itself out by after Thanksgiving there. But again, I agree with Minnesota being in the top 25. Again, I'm not going to lose my mind if you think Wisconsin should be 20, Iowa 21, Minnesota 22 or whatever. That's fine, whatever. But like what Minnesota's put on the body of work here the last month,
yeah,
I think they are a top 25.
I get it. My point is more so it's like they went to like, you know, Big Ten.org. They found the standings. They copy and pasted the top three teams in literally their order and just pasted and started at number 20 in row.
It's almost like the college football playoff committee consisting of a bunch of old guys. Like the 11 of them probably shouldn't be the barometer. Maybe there should be a little bit more diversity there.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe.
Golly.
Maybe.
You're getting me all riled up.
Okay. Okay. Let's look. Okay. In week 10 of the college football playoff or college football season, let's take a look around the Big Ten real quick. Starting with the 11 o'clock games, number 5, Ohio State at Nebraska. This is, I believe, Fox's big noon game. And funny that it'll be taking place at 11 a.m. in Nebraska, but it'll be the big noon game because all that matters is the East Coast. Probably no surprise that Ohio State is a 15-point favorite with the 64.5 over under. I think that Nebraska could stick with Ohio State maybe if everything rolls their way, but I do expect Ohio State to win big.
I just need Nebraska not to give up.
Yeah.
Nebraska, you're going to lose by a lot to a very good Ohio State team this weekend, and then they get a bye week before they have to go to Madison. If you're a Gopher fan right now, you are pulling for Nebraska to figure it out in the bye week and at least to beat one of Iowa and Wisconsin, preferably Wisconsin. But it's that Nebraska team, man. Like I said earlier, 5-18 in one score games under Scott Frost. That is insane.
All right, let's look at number 3 Michigan State at the Purdue Boilermakers. Purdue currently only a 3-point dog at home against the number 3 team in the country with a 54 over under. This line kind of shocks me, but basically Vegas hasn't really put a lot of faith yet into Michigan State all season. I know that Purdue obviously has found a way to knock off the number 2 team in the country already, so maybe number 3 shouldn't be that hard given they're at home, but here we are, Ryan.
Here we are, and that's where, again, we're not going to pick these games, and at least I'm not planning to this week, but like, I think Vegas is thinking, number one, is it a letdown game for Michigan State after an emotional home win? Now they have to travel on the road to West Lafayette. Purdue, I think, is a pretty good team that just went down into Lincoln to beat Nebraska. I wouldn't be shocked at all if Purdue did it.
Now, I wouldn't either.
Anticipating Michigan State winning that game? Yeah. But again, that wouldn't shock me to see Jeff Brohm rise up. And again, maybe that, I mean, Purdue is kind of the interesting one because they are 3-2 in the Big Ten right now. Same with Wisconsin and Iowa, but they also have much more difficult schedule than can say Wisconsin over these next 4 games. But I wouldn't be shocked at all if Purdue and Aiden O'Connell and David Bell and your guy, Xander Horvath, are able to get it done.
All right, so looking at the 2:30 slate of games, I guess that was a 2:30 game too as well, the Michigan State-Purdue game. But continuing with them, Wisconsin, number 21, against the Scarlet Knights of Rutgers via Piscataway. I will tell you what, this is another, Ryan, under 40 over under for Wisconsin, no surprise.
Golly.
37.5. Wisconsin is favored by 13. I feel like that's a pretty good over under. I think that's also a pretty fair spread because I just don't think much of Rutgers offense in general, and I think a ton of the Wisconsin defense.
Yeah. Again, it's going to come down to can Graham Mertz and this running attack make enough plays, because you know their defense is going to be able to stop Noah Vedral and the Rutgers anemic offense. So I'll say this thing is like 20-7 or something like that. It's going to hit the under. Team under, baby.
Your team under. Okay. Penn State at Maryland. Penn State a 10-point favorite, 55 over under. Here's the thing. I want to know what the over under is for Penn State rushing yards in this game.
Well, Penn State just can't run the ball.
No, I know.
Like, they literally can't run the ball. It's Sean Clifford or bust. And you're mentioning these 2:30 games, and that's where I'd mention we still don't currently know what the kickoff time for the Iowa game next weekend will be.
We don't, but we do.
Well, I would imagine from what I've gleaned off of the Twitters, it's going to be a 2:30 game. Yeah. They didn't – you know, I am shocked that they didn't get – number one, like the night game, which again, we can talk about if, you know, maybe Minnesota decided to veto that because of the whole Big Ten November games, but I don't even think it got to that. I just think the TV network said, you're not going to be the big noon game on Fox, and you know, they don't want you for the 6 o'clock. So I don't know what the other games are that they're going to decide to put there, but I would imagine this thing is going to be 2:30 down in Iowa City. But for the over-under for Penn State rushing yards, I don't know, 45. They literally can't run the ball, and Maryland can't stop the run.
Yeah, I know. That's what's so funny. But, you know, here was the thing I found interesting. The 55 over-under, I would take the over on this, man.
Yeah. Again, I don't trust Locke's defense.
I don't either, but I also feel like, you know, I also feel like, hey, Maryland can find a way to put up points. They bounced back last week. Penn State has had some instances where they've given up points to some not great offenses, but also been really, really good at times. So I wouldn't be surprised if this thing ends up going over.
No, and then speaking of not going over, Iowa versus Northwestern is a 6 p.m. game in Evanston. What's that over under, like 38?
It is 40.5, 12.5-point favorite for Iowa on the road.
Yeah, Iowa should be able to just run the ball here. Spencer Petras over under 105.
But here's the thing, they can't run the ball, Ryan. They're not very good at running the ball.
Well, Northwestern's not really good at stopping the run. I just saw it last week.
Yeah.
So, like, but it's interesting. It's a big week for Brian Ferentz, and it's a big week for Spencer Petras.
Mm-hmm.
Because if this thing is, like, tight at half or tight into the third quarter – and Northwestern starts to believe at home there, that thing could get awfully interesting in Evanston, especially if Iowa continues to struggle immensely offensively.
All right, final game of the day, a 6:30 start in the Big House. The Michigan Wolverines are hosting the Indiana Hoosiers, a 50.5 over-under. Michigan is a 20-point favorite. I expect them to roll here. I expect them to run the ball like gangbusters, even though McNamara was able to throw quite a bit against Michigan State. I do expect them to run.
I think you hit it on the head pretty good. I don't expect this to be much of a game in Ann Arbor. Indiana's offense is a complete disaster right now. They're on their third quarterback of the year and the freshman McCauley. Michigan's going to roll. So that leaves us with Luke. What are you predicting for Saturday, 11 a.m., Minneapolis, Minnesota?
Yeah. So again, just a reminder for the people listening at home, if you weren't paying attention during the facts and figures, Gophers 44 over under and a 14.5-point favorite. I do think the Gophers will win. I think it'll be something. It'll probably be something like 27-17. I think Illinois covers this, but I don't think. I don't think that they push over the 44-point mark.
In the last six Illinois versus Minnesota games, the Gophers have won how many?
Let's see. Last year they won. 2019 they won. 2018 they lost, I believe. So how many years were going back?
Last 6 years.
I will go Gophers 4-2.
They're 5-1. Dang. When was the last time Illinois beat Minnesota in Minneapolis?
Oh, goodness. In the last 6 years?
2009 is the last time Illinois beat Minnesota in Minneapolis. So these two teams, different trajectories. Minnesota's on a 4-game Big Ten winning streak. Illinois just lost to Rutgers at home. So I have respect for Ryan Walters and the Illini defense, but that offense, it's not good. I mean, if Illinois wins this game, it's going to be a Bowling Green-esque score where it's like 17-13, 14-13, 17-16, something like that. So if Minnesota can limit Chase Brown, get out to an early lead, Brandon Peters hasn't shown much, and these converted pass catchers, former quarterbacks, turned receivers, I don't think they can elevate the passing game. So I see this game close into halftime, but it's one of those where it's like, is it really in doubt? Is it not? Minnesota gets their fifth straight Big Ten victory to set up a massive game in Iowa City next weekend. Minnesota 27, Illinois 14. And that's where I would take Illinois plus 14.5 there. I would take the under there. I think possessions here are going to be at a premium because both teams just want to play ball control.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many offensive possessions there will actually be, especially if Illinois can make this thing a ball game. But if Minnesota gets out to the early lead and Illinois struggling with three and outs again, I could see this being a game where Minnesota just ball controls the heck out of it and it is what it is. But I don't feel comfortable enough to take Minnesota by, you know, could I see Minnesota 31-14? No doubt. But I also think Illinois has been very stingy, especially in the red zone of late. So 27-14 Minnesota, they would then improve to 7-2 overall and 5-1 in Big Ten play.
All right. We want to thank everybody for listening. We want to thank our sponsors, the Goal Line Club, Ayers Rock Planning, and Insurance by Burns. Check them out. Support them. We appreciate them a ton. We appreciate you for listening, and go Gophers.